Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Western Focus Podcast. I'm your host, Steven Meister, and finally, back with me, live and in studio, not really in studio, in the comfort of our homes, is Cobalt, my constant co-host. We're back together, finally, for this episode of the podcast. Sorry for the bit of a desynchronization over these last couple weeks, but with the LCS schedule and things going on, we had to kind of make it work as best as we could, but we're back now. And just in time for a crazy weekend of the LCS playoffs and then the second to last week of the regular season, I guess, for LEC, whatever you want to call it, still before those two teams get eliminated and then we get into the quote playoffs for them. So definitely an action-packed episode, a lot of stuff to cover. There were two five-game bangers in the LCS. LEC had some very exciting matches. G2 and Fnatic played. We'll probably end up talking about that one a little bit, obviously, as Cobalt's the resident G2 fan. I like Fnatic a little bit, not as much as I used to since they beat Cloud9 at Worlds that one year, but I digress. Cobalt, how's it going?
You know, the things were a little bit less than perfect this week as a G2 fan, and like you said, we'll kind of get to that, but otherwise it's been all right. The games have been here and there. The LEC is continuing to make me proud is not the right word, but I'm something about that region. And then the LCS is once again proving to be probably, if we're being honest, the better region in terms of average game quality. So it's been a banger as always, and happy to jump right back into it.
You say that, but did you watch the FlyQuest Team Liquid series?
Okay, I say average because there are outliers. Both regions have their indications that we are still the West, you know, far from perfect, but on average, I will say that the LCS has tended to be a little bit better.
Yep, and we'll be getting into that FlyQuest TL series very shortly. That was the second series of the weekend, because my God, that was something to watch. If you missed out on it, we'll give you the rundown on that coming up. But before we jump into the LCS, we started off with them last episode. It'll be Cobalt to kick off this week with the LEC back in action together. I couldn't think of a more perfect way to start it off. So Cobalt, tell us about Europe.
So, you know, with the whole average game quality type thing going on, the LEC isn't quite on its best foot right now, but if the LEC was close together and kind of tough to call in the winter season, it's even tougher now, if you ask me. Like, you can spread a bit more on the technicalities, but the way I see it, at least, there are really three tiers in the league right now, and only three. So let's start with the easy ones. Up at the top, we got the S tier. Obviously, we still have to have the obvious contender of G2 still up there. Both Team Heretics and Giant X felt confident and decided to leave Draven up for them this week. So G2 snatched the pickup in both games. And to probably nobody's surprise, Hans completely cashed out those small advantages he was building with those catching the axes right around 10 minutes in both those games in some group skirmishes. And then the game was just kind of over from there. And this is something I wanted to kind of highlight as a little bit of an angle I never really considered about the team before, that as much as I've talked plenty about Hans being kind of iffy and in-game on his execution, and plenty of times I've called him G2's weakest link, he does force the Draven Kalista ban almost every single game, which, if you really think about it, when you have two of your three early bans locked and loaded, and then now Smolder was a factor, if you leave one of them open, it's always going to be a problem. And if you don't, then you're down two or three bans against G2. So that is kind of a little thing I wanted to throw in there, that Hans really does bring that option of flexibility for the team in the draft. But speaking of draft, the team that's making the argument for the first time all year to join G2 up there in the S tier is none other than Fnatic, because they, as you mentioned, Steve, they played that game together this past weekend, and Fnatic, right from the gate, they completely outdrafted, gave G2 the Smolder, but then into RE Lee Sin, they drafted Poppy, and that just completely shut down pretty much any plan G2 had. Huge counter, obviously, to what they're trying to do, and just from the draft in the game, they completely put an end to G2's win streak in dominant fashion. up in the top lane, Oscarin and completely gapped Broken Blade's Gwen, multiple solo kills in lane, out of lane. G2 basically played that game 4v5. And then, notwithstanding that one favorable skirmish early on, outside of it, Fnatic was just every single time anything happened, Fnatic came out ahead. They won the fights, they got the picks, they got the objectives. Just the G2 never really stood a chance. So obviously it is a volatile BO1. I'm not really the quickest to overreact there. I would have liked to see that a BO3, because maybe Fnatic will prove that they're still better on the day. But huge credit to them for stomping as hard as they did in that game.
Yeah, we'll have to save the format discussion for another episode. We can talk all day probably about best of ones and best of threes, but it was a very impressive game for Fnatic. Yeah, like you said, with Broken Blade, he was 0-4 like 10 minutes into that game, 15 minutes into the game. He got completely nullified. And it's interesting because the Gwen Cassante matchup is like supposed to be Gwen favored now, especially that's later on into the game where we all know what Gwen does with her abilities and building and all those items and melting tanks and all that. But I feel like even in some modern like games, like I just remember the Cassante just finding the solo kills on the Gwen in the lane, and I don't really understand how that's like happening so consistently. It feels like it obviously could just be just a couple of bad sample sizes and just seeing those games, but I feel like I've been seeing the Cassante come up a little bit more in that matchup than it probably should be. But even other than that, it really was just a great team game from Fnatic. There was a play bot lane where Humanoid just found the most nasty three-man Talia combo that I've almost ever seen. They got a 4-for-1 fight, and that they're up 10k gold at 23 minutes. It did take them a little bit of time to end it. It still took them about 33-ish minutes to end it. And considering how big that gold lead was, maybe you would like to see if they could find an easier way to end. But G2's comp obviously does get a little bit better as they get some more items under their way with the Gwen. Smolder can stall for infinity with all of his range and the true damage on his stack. So some of those fights could have been, you know, even more challenging for Fnatic, even if their gold lead was just less than like 10,000 gold at that point of time. So other than that, though, it was a dominant game from Fnatic. Just couldn't quite end it as fast due to some of those circumstances. And it was a great week for Fnatic overall. 3-0, they beat GiantX before that, and then the day after that, they beat Vitality in a nice game where Vitality is actually looking pretty good. They're 4-2 to start right now, up there with Heretics tied for third in that grouping below Fnatic and G2 tied at 5-1. But the thing I think we both kind of want to talk about the most is SK Gaming, because they had a very hectic week. They ended up losing the first game of their weekend to BDS, which really was just like a big throw for SK. Both teams kind of were getting really over aggressive during their peaks and points of the lead that they had in the game, but just kind of ended up being BDS did a much better job in the team fights. Exekick was doing really good, and overall BDS were able to just do what they normally do. They got into a decent enough point of the game for them where they're able to find a good team fighter to take Baron, win the game not super long after that. Then the second game against Heretics for SK was a brutal loss, because Niski was really finding some good Ahri flanks, getting onto Zvyru, getting onto Flocked, and really disrupting them in a point of the game where TH really was ahead. But Niski couldn't quite keep that going for forever. Trimby ended up having a nice job of stopping one of his flanks. TH was able to win the fight after that, and they did end up winning that game against SK. Again, a brutal loss for how good, especially Niski, was in that game, was doing on the Ahri, because again, he really was disrupting those carries on Team Heretics. And then there's the KC game, which thank goodness for them, they did end up winning. But for your sake, since you're the big SK fan here, I'll let you describe the triumphs of that game as you wish.
Triumph's not the word I would use.
Yeah, they won, so it's a triumph in that sense. But yeah, it was a very sloppy game.
Neither team walked away on that day happy, and I don't think even if KC ended up claiming the win, they still wouldn't be happy. But as you mentioned, fortunately, SK was able to pick up that win after the tragic first 2 days of the weekend. But it's just a depressing kind of trajectory where SK start off 6k gold ahead. For KC, usually their early game is their only shining moment, so the fact that SK was able to claim that is good for them. But then they nearly get aced over committing to a Nexus push. That gives up Hextech Soul with another bad fight. That then loses them Baron to yet another bad fight. And at this point, KC are pretty much set up for success. They get four kills. All that's left is DOS. He shouldn't really be able to protect the base from them. But KC ends up overcommitting even harder onto the Nexus push of their own. And it's thanks to, coincidentally enough, DOS's Renata ult that kind of sends KC into a total frenzy. They kind of kill each other off. Two of them die. And then the rest of the SK starts slowly respawning. They're able to pick up the last couple kills. And then by kind of using the Hextech portals and then running through mid lane, SK are able to claim that win because they were able to at least open up the Nexus. But it was just a disgusting weekend for this team overall. Like that first game, again, they were up at 6k gold. They had two inhibs down. The casters were pretty much writing the game off. I was writing the game off. But then let's set this up, this fight as well, where SKC Adams Olaf by himself top. They send three people to jump him. Okay, fine enough play. Exekick, who's on a very fed Zeri at this point, is a bit late to this party, but he has a choice here. Either A, he's going to ride the wall up to delete Adam, and then collapse on the rest of BDS through mid, win the game. Option B, he's going to ride the wall to the right, and he goes directly into four members of BDS basically by himself. Now, what does he choose? Naturally, it's option B, where that allows Adams Olaf to run down those three SK members who have plenty of CC, but Olaf doesn't care. They have low DPS, so he basically wins that on his own. And then Exekick gets Nico rooted because he has no escape at this point, blown up, and then BDS just completely go 5-0, take a Baron, take a Drake, the 6k gold lead instantly disintegrates, BDS take the win. Tragedy there. Heretic's very similar story. Game was very scrappy, SK started down 4k, but then started executing really good fights, put themselves ahead with a Baron. Surely they can win from this position. But nope, they try way too hard to flank instead of playing simple front to back. Carries get caught three fights in a row, game is lost again. So that win against KC there, that they very easily could have lost too, was necessary for them to maintain a reasonable place in the standings. And just from looking at this team, they could have very easily gone 3-0 if they cleaned things up, very easily could have gone 0-3 if they scuffed that game against KC harder. So they have the talent, but they're kind of getting in their own way, and it's just depressing.
And I know I'm kind of harping on this was the most memorable game, but especially in that KC one for them, it was super unfortunate for K-Corp, because in that fight where they end up taking the Baron in the final, maybe that was like around 40 minutes or something like that, I can't exactly remember. In like 9 out of 10 situations, that's probably a game-ending teamfight victory. They won the teamfight, they get the Baron, but they didn't have a wave mid. SK had super minions pushing in the mid lane, so that by the time that the minion wave spawned and it got down all the way to SK's base, Niski was respawned because he ended up dying in a desynced fight at Dragon before SK lost the Baron fight to KC. And then, as you mentioned, DOS's with Renata ult in that fight was huge. He had like three just absolutely crucial Renata ults at least throughout the course of that game. I was really surprised because I've said it before, I usually feel like support is kind of the hardest role for me to always, like, you know, tackle and appreciate how good someone can be. But in that game, it was clear, like, DOS was just, he had some nice ease and some little skirmishes throughout it, you know, for the repositioning and whatever on people trying to engage. But those Renata ults were huge. He got an upset on those a couple of times, who was able to end up killing one of his own teammates at least throughout those ults. And then that last one in the base was huge, leading for SK being able to find the comeback on that one. So definitely a much needed win for them in that game, because as you mentioned, otherwise it would have been in 0-3 week, even though they definitely had the potential to find victories in all three of them. So very very polarizing team right now is SK, and hopefully we can see them clean it up, because I think we both really like them. We've talked about them before. This definitely seems like a team with a lot of potential, and I really like a lot of the individual players on it. You know, Niski and Exekick are still my favorites, but I've grown a bigger appreciation for Irrelevant as well. So definitely looking to see more out of them over the course of spring and hopefully summer as well. but we'll have to wait and see how they end up placing in the standings so far. They are firmly in the middle, in fifth place, tied for fifth with BDS. And we'll just have to see how they continue to go.
And then kind of jumping to the opposite end of the spectrum here, down to what I call my F tier, we have three teams that have very little hope of achieving pretty much anything. And that's K-Corp at 2-4, and then GX and Rogue both occupying the bottom place at 1-5. So starting with KC here, because they're not really the best, but rather the least bad of the three. I mentioned last week that they had to beat Rogue and then maybe sneak an upset in one more game to hit the playoffs. But they once again come in and subvert my expectations by getting completely stomped by Rogue, but then turn around and very convincingly beat Mad Lions Koi the very next day. So kind of all over the place here. And then looking up at their upcoming matches for this final weekend of the regular season, they've got Vitality, Heretics, and BDS. I think that they'll probably be able to take at least one of those between either Vitality or BDS, in my personal opinion. So they should still be able to just barely hit playoffs, but the way they're getting there is weird. GX, I won't bother talking too much about. I still want Peach and Patrick dropped for all the same reasons as before. Maybe they beat Rogue, but Vitality and Team Heretics are both going to clap them this upcoming weekend. And then Rogue, on the other hand, deserves just the teeny tiniest bit of credit. They must have heard that everyone calls them the do-nothing team because they finally started doing stuff this weekend. Against Vitality, they were down 7k gold, but with the Smolder pick, they started randomly winning fights, and they made it very, very close, but in the end, they still toppled just because they are Rogue. Against Mad Lions Koi, then, they attempted a level 3 dive bot, so credit to them for doing something there, but the execution was absolutely terrible, so Markkun dies, and then Comp and Zoelis both have to flash out in exchange for basically nothing. So Rogue is still bad, but I at least bump them up with KC and GX just because they've started actually doing things.
And at least now we know that if you're Rogue and a Rogue fan, you can always count on them beating K-Corp once in the regular season. You're guaranteed a win because they will find a way to take down KC, and for that, I am grateful.
There you go. And then the final tier that I have in my three-tier list for now is what I call the ABC tier, because I've named five of the teams, but the other five are kind of all over the place, and as much as you can argue for or against any of them, really, I don't think any of these five are really that much convincingly better or worse than any other. So first three teams I don't really have too much to say about is Heretics. They're looking solid. They had an expected loss to G2, but won the other two matches. Probably one of the stronger of these bunch. BDS was looking better than last week by going 2-1, but they're still significantly weaker than the winter, and that one win against SK was kind of lucky. And then Mad Lions Koi are continuing their cold streak by taking that expected win versus Rogue, but then taking really, really depressing losses against both Vitality and somehow K-Corp. So not the greatest of splits from them here. They're resting pretty far down at the bottom, and as the team that placed second in winter, that's kind of very much unexpected. But the one team that I wanted to kind of highlight here is Vitality, the final team that we haven't talked about yet, because they went 2-1, but I really feel like they should have gone 3-0 this week. And I hate this team for the exact same reasons that I hated MAD last year. I am dead set on the opinion that this team sucks, but they just keep taking those wins, and it pisses me off. And that game they played against Fnatic, the one loss they took this weekend, is kind of the perfect demonstration of this. So starting off, they play a very solid early to mid game, steady buildup of leads. They took plenty of sloppy fights. They were sloppy, but fights that were just barely able to kind of edge them up a little bit. They were barely in their favor, like, for example, the occasional 3-for-2, converts it to a Drake, whatever it is. But then at some point in that mid to late game, they just randomly decided that they become spectators. They don't actually play in this game. So Exhibit A, Photon, who's playing a not ahead, not behind, just an even Cassante, he's slowly split pushing top. Fnatic casually go take Drake's soul, while the rest of Vitality watches and doesn't really contest. Photon resets, he takes a tower, but that's all they get. Exhibit B, Photon, who's still playing that even Cassante, slowly split pushes bot this time. Fnatic then go and casually take Baron, while the rest of Vitality once again watches, doesn't contest at all. Photon doesn't get any towers, this time he resets. You're kind of starting to see a trend here. And then Exhibit C, Photon dies 2v1 split pushing bot, and then the rest of Vitality loses a 4v3 mid, and Fnatic just runs down the Nexus for the win. So, all game long, they were pretty much in an even or slightly ahead position, and this game very much should have been won. But they just stopped doing anything and then just gave Fnatic the game for free. So I'm low on this team, but they, for some reason, are at the top.
I think overall that Vitality have obviously looked better. They're 4-2 right now, which is good. And that game really was sad. I was writing my notes for that game, and my headline for it was that this is just kind of like a sad win for Fnatic, which, I mean, not a lot of those exist. I think when we're talking about, when we get into the Fly versus TL series, some of those games were kind of just sad wins. But I think this one was like a really interesting one because, like you said, they didn't really have to do a ton. As you mentioned, the skirmishes were like just really back and forth, and it's not like either team was really super far ahead at all until Vitality literally just like again, as you described, just basically stopped playing. Fnatic just got two free Barons this game. The first one, at least, they did pick off Daglus for, and they got a 20-minute Baron. Just great timing after getting that kill on them. They were in close enough position to be able to do that. But then the second one, they literally just got for free. Like Vitality just were not around. I don't know if they just weren't prepared for it, or if they weren't expecting it, or if maybe they knew and they're just like, nah, it's not worth it. I think that at that point, the game was still like close enough that if they knew about it, they would have tried to do something at the very least. But Fnatic literally just get two free Barons this game, and then in the game-winning fight, it was also unfortunate for Vitality because June was playing Ashe, and he's just kind of hovering the line out of vision from the minion wave coming in as they're starting to meet by Vitality's middle inhibitor tower. Jun's just out of vision. He throws the Ash Arrow down mid lane, and Karzy literally just Kalista hops from the auto attack right into it, gets piled on immediately, and that's how Vitality lose. It was a very weird game because of all of that. It's not like there was no action in the early game. It's just that it wasn't a ton, but it was like super even back and forth. And then the objectives, Vitality just completely let go that game, and then you top it all off with just like a very unlucky, bad click from Karzy in that situation. That was a very tough loss for them, and just not a very enthusiastic win for Fnatic, but you'll kind of take it. And if you're Vitality, it's like, yeah, like I haven't watched a ton of their other games, so I don't know their whole picture, but yeah, you got to really tighten up some of that decision making and getting at least vision around objectives, or at least trying to deduce where the opponent could be, because that second Baron was really embarrassing.
Yeah, so just a very depressing situation all around. Again, Vitality, they had a relatively easy strength of schedule. The other two games were, if I recall correctly, they played, who was it? Rogue, and then I think
MDK.
Yeah, Mad Lions Koi. So two teams that are relatively weak. At least Mad Lions Koi is kind of on the downturn, like I said. So those two wins were relatively free, if you're being honest. But then that Fnatic game really should have been a win if they just continued playing, but it wasn't meant to be. So that's kind of the rundown for the LEC. I don't know if, Steve, you have any kind of closing thoughts here, but I think the meat of the episode will be the LCS segment.
I do want to highlight the LEC standings because I was talking about it with you before we started recording. I love the 5-2-way ties with Fnatic and G2 5-1, Heretics, Vitality 4-2, SK, BDS 3-3, Mad Lions and Carmine Corp are 2-4, and then GX and Rogue are 1-5. I just find that very funny. You don't really see that very often, so it's just a cool thing that I noticed when I was looking at the standings. And yeah, like some of these teams really are just where you expect them to, like, obviously Fnatic G2 at the top, Giantx Rogue at the bottom, we kind of expected that. But then seeing like the differences in Vitality, at least for now, being up there at 4-2, Heretics is looking a lot better with Zvyru and Trimby in there, and then BDS and Mad Lions Koi are kind of, I guess you can call it, regressing down to where we expected them to be at. I think definitely for Mad Lions, this is more of where we thought they would be at the beginning, barring their incredible success in winter. And then BDS was always a team for me, which is like, man, like I don't really know where I want to place them, because they did have their moments last year where they looked really good. But I'm just looking at some of the other teams around them, it's just like, man, like I don't really feel like I can place them super high. And it's kind of seeming like both of those teams are kind of regressing to those points right now. We'll see obviously where they end up at this point in the season, because Mad Lions definitely are on the verge of not making playoffs. I think they will need a little bit of help to make that happen. So I think they're going to be okay, and BDS should be okay at 3-3. But it's kind of interesting to see where those changes, especially with those two teams, have fallen down the standings quite a lot in spring. And I would love to kind of know more as to why. I feel like it could be for Mad Lions. Maybe it's just, you know, teams are figuring them out a bit more. Maybe just, you know, all of those games that they played maybe are catching up to them. Maybe they're burning out a little bit or something like that, because they did have a super long run in playoffs. BDS, I just think like they kind of need some changes probably, like somewhere. Like I don't know what it's going to be. If the Adam situation comes back or gets worse, maybe he's gone, which would be kind of a shame because he's obviously a fun player, but you can't be dealing with that kind of stuff in your team environment. But it seems like they still need to figure out something to get them over the hump. And unfortunately, I don't really know what that is. So I hope that they can figure that out on their own too, because they are a very interesting team, but they just haven't been able to put it all together.
Now, final thing, because I completely forgot, very quick, minimal analysis. Who are your two teams that are going to get knocked out this next week?
I don't even know the schedule, but I think it's pretty safe to say GX and Rogue. Maybe there is, like I said, with Mad Lions, maybe there is a world where they stumble more, or K-Corp. But with two teams at 1-5 and two teams at 2-4, those two at the bottom, GX and Rogue, definitely have the advantage of getting eliminated. So I'll go with them.
Those are my picks as well, just because I've been kind of mentioning the past couple weeks is that KC is looking decent enough to secure a playoff spot, but I imagine that they'll probably go 0-2 once that does happen. So those are my two picks as well.
So now we will be going into the LCS for those four series that happened over this last weekend. The first one of which being Cloud9 versus 100 Thieves. And as much as I'd love to just drag on about this series and just completely just hype up C9 to death, there really wasn't a ton to talk about, like in terms of like the grand scheme of things. It really was just a quick 3-0 stomp for C9, which I definitely was not expecting. They completely outclassed 100 Thieves in basically every position. Even Fudge was winning top lane. That's how you know it's a real stomp. But I said in the last podcast that I did on my own that C9 2-0'd 100 Thieves. They actually went 1-1 versus them, so apologies on me for making that little bit of mistake. I misremembered how that second game went. But the big thing in this game, again, was just like C9 really just outclassed them. There was something that I saw on Twitter where apparently River was a little bit sick and they didn't get a ton of practice with him in that week of games. So for scrims and stuff, maybe that did have an impact on them on stage, as River is obviously the most experienced guy on that team. I'd presume probably the leader on that team, helping figure out what to do with decision making and stuff like that. But even with that, C9 really just did look that good. And I think the biggest difference for me was obviously Fudge having some really good performances up in top lane as well. But I think Berserker really set him off for a good series with that Senna game in game one, because I talked about that Senna game where they did Senna Ornn bot lane with Vulcan. And I don't like that pairing, because the whole thing with Ornn obviously is you want to get your levels and be able to upgrade your items and then upgrade your team's items as well. And as a support, especially in pro, that's not always going to happen. But this game, they didn't go Senna Ornn. It was either Senna Nautilus, I think, or Senna Tom. I can't remember exactly, but that Senna game was a ton better. He was actually like farming souls and being like at a good pace for them throughout the game, whereas in that Senna Ornn game, it was just dreadful and the whole team got stomped. So Berserker, I really do think, had probably the best series on that team for all of the C9 players. Obviously, with it being a 3-0, everyone really did look great. But it was just nice to see Berserker improve and step up and kind of look like more of that carry that we'd expect him to be. He had a really nice Lucian game after that and played a game of Varus as well. So definitely, I'd still like to see him more on those style of champions, as I do think his hands are his best asset to him and being able to hand stiff players. But it was nice to see a good Senna game out of him as well. And I think that was a very nice job for C9 to work on that and prove it, because that is something you'll have to play at least for now. Maybe in the next patch, I think Senna's getting kind of gutted for ADC. But it's good to see that they're able to bounce back on it, and it was super strong for them overall as a team.
And I definitely wanted to shout out Berserker's Lucian performance especially, because, you know, we've had the memes about how the West isn't able to pilot this champion, and while it seems like for the most part teams have kind of started shifting their attention away from that pick, really big credit here to C9 for still sticking to their guns and drafting that for him, because like you said, Berserker is one of those more mechanically gifted kind of players. So the way he pulled out this Lucian this past weekend was just a monster performance. He was dealing huge chunks of damage to people, in like he was just dashing into like three people by himself pretty much and just chunking half their health or something. So I really wanted to shout out that game especially, because in the West, for how bad that pick has looked, he made it look really, really good.
And C9 looked really, really good in that series. They will be set up to be facing the winner of this next series that we'll be talking about, FlyQuest versus TL, which did end up going the full distance, as I alluded to before. And it was a FlyQuest victory. It was a 3-2. And it was pretty disgusting in terms of just the overall like quality of games for this series. Definitely not worth watching the highlights if you don't have the time for it, just because it was a 5-game series. A lot of those games did go long. The only clean game of this series was the fourth one, and it was by Team Liquid, surprisingly. It was not a super action-packed game, but they were able to get the one real distinct advantage that anyone had in that game, which was the dragon stacking. They got a very early dragon soul, found a teamfight victory after that, got Baron, closed it out in a very efficient way. So surprisingly, it was Team Liquid with the cleanest game of that series, but it was still nice to see a clean game throughout one of those 5 games. Because every single other one, the best way to describe it was just basically whichever team threw less was able to win. FlyQuest almost threw the first game, but they were able to just barely hold it together and get the win and start off the series strong. But they did throw the second game, albeit it was a very nice mechanical Lee Sin play from Umpty. He ended up picking Masu in mid lane, where he ended up queuing onto Nautilus, but he stopped the queue kind of mid-air for the ward hop and then flashed behind Masu, kicked him into Core JJ's rail, who got the knock-up combo on him, led to a strong teamfight win from TL. They were able to eventually close out that game off the back of that play. So it was a throw from FlyQuest, but it wasn't just like a completely egregious one. It was a very nice play from Team Liquid to be able to capitalize on it and then take that one. And then TL had a pretty nice early lead in game 3 with a huge Nicol ultimate from APA that got onto 4 people, I believe, in an early skirmish. But they basically lost that lead as quickly as they got it. Yan and APA got caught multiple times, as they usually find themselves doing throughout most of their games. And FlyQuest got the lead, like I said, right back. And then they actually had a pretty decent close to that game as well. But it was kind of a little mini throw from Team Liquid, as they were ahead in the early stages of that game. But then there was Game 5, and Game 5 was definitely the long, drawn-out banger of this series. FlyQuest ended up being 3.5k gold up at 20 minutes, but Jensen and Inspired overstayed top lane, getting the top inner tower. TL were able to collapse on them, as well as, I believe, Bwipo, who was up there joining them. They got 3 kills off of that on them, got a 20-minute Baron. TL go up 3k off of that, end up getting, you know, a nice lead of their own. Then APA and Yan get caught pushing bot lane by FlyQuest. Inspired initially gets a nice flash stun to APA. FlyQuest pile in. Yan ends up getting hit by, I believe it was Varus ultimate, and then he cleansed that, but then he got hit by a max range Nautilus hook to get dragged back in. Then he died in that sequence. So they end up getting caught bottom. Not too much happens off of that. They stop the push, and FlyQuest gets a couple kills, but stops their momentum. Then Team Liquid end up catching Jensen a couple minutes later, and then they end up getting another Baron, but they can't end up ending with it. Then we fast forward 6 minutes later from this point, Jensen gets picked again top lane as Team Liquid are pushing, but FlyQuest, at least to their credit, were in a nice position, in a very quick position, to be able to collapse. Jensen did end up dying, but he was playing Annie that game. He was able to get a little bit of damage off before he died, and then as FlyQuest piled in, they were able to stomp Team Liquid there. Masu and Inspired really took over that fight. Bwipo as well was pretty decent on the Renekton there, but Masu and Inspired absolutely took over that one. And then they get Baron, but then they can end up ending with that Baron either. So we go to a Dragon Soul fight at 38 minutes, which FlyQuest end up getting. And then finally, in the absolute end of this game, finally, 40 minutes in, FlyQuest end up catching Team Liquid mid with Bwipo and Jensen, flash ulting with Annie, Tibbers on impact, and Core JJ. They die pretty quickly right after that. APA and Yan and Umti are kind of on the wrong side of the map at that point as FlyQuest are pushing mid. APA tries to make a desperation play to cut the wave and maybe see if he could get a kill, but he was basically doing that alone as Yan, I believe, was basing, and then Umti was trying to cut off the next wave that was pushing in for FlyQuest, but they had a couple of minions with them, plus most of them were alive. They were tanky enough that they could tank the towers anyways for the minions, and FlyQuest were able to finally take the series win and end the game off of that push. But overall, it was just a super messy game. That's a very, you know, quick and rough summary of it. If you are so obliged to watch the highlights, that is the best way to kind of take in the chaos that was all five of these games. But it comes down to TL really just losing for a lot of their same reasons. APA and Yan were getting caught a lot in that last fight. It ended up being Impact and Core JJ, so a little bit different, but still it was a nice angle from FlyQuest to be able to find that. Throughout all of the ebbs and the flows in the series, though, everyone was getting caught on both teams. So it was really just a matter of, like I said, whoever made the least amount of mistakes that didn't get just absurdly punished by the opponent won, and it ended up being FlyQuest. There was a clear MVP, though, and I do think it was Inspired. He really was the most consistent player throughout this series by far. I thought Jensen had some decent moments as well, but wasn't quite as consistent as Inspired. He was just the really only one guy that you could look at on both teams and be like, yeah, like I can definitely see what he's doing throughout each game, and he's, you know, generally speaking, in the right positions, making right decisions, doing the most he can to help the team. And he had a really nice Viego game in that fifth one as well, as I mentioned, especially in that one fight top lane with TL trying to collapse on Jensen. That was a big one with him and Masu there. So shout out to Inspired, probably the MVP of this series for me, just because he was the one not really making the most mistakes, and just a completely crazy series of games that I hope I never see something like that again.
Now, if we take a step back from the games themselves, the one thing that you might miss if you do watch the highlights is the sort of back end of what was going on in that game. Now, Steve, I don't know if you know what I'm alluding to here, but I gotta give a shout out to my boy APA.
Oh yeah, there was a lot of trash talking going on. That was fun. I love seeing that on the broadcast. They're actually highlighting that. So big shout out to the LCS for that. Even though APA ended up taking a vow of silence for their next series, that trash talk versus FlyQuest was great.
Yeah, he brought a lot of spice to it, and I really do appreciate that we got actual screenshots showing up of what was going on in that chat, because at most what you normally get on the broadcast is the casters shouting it out, but we saw it all out in full display, and APA unfortunately embarrassed himself a little bit because TL picked up the L that series, but I appreciate when players are doing that because it brings that extra level of excitement, so... As you said, the series itself was kind of a mess. I do think that neither team showed up in their best form. Plenty of mistakes on either end. And as much as I'm personally confident that FlyQuest would be the better team any other day, that particular day they were pretty much even. And so that's why it was all the way up to those five games, and each of those games were very, very drawn out.
And then luckily for us, the following day, we were treated to another five-game series, this one between 100 Thieves and NRG. This one was a bit cleaner. It was nowhere near as messy as the FlyQuest TL one. And I think overall, even though it did go to five games, it was a very nice series from 100 Thieves, of course, especially in their wins. But even in the losses, they had, you know, plenty of good moments with decent leads, but they just ended up making like a couple of little mistakes here and there that they ended up blowing it, and that's really how NRG was able to push this one out to 5. In the first game, 100 Thieves had a lead, but Quid ended up getting caught by Tom Kench. NRG was able to take advantage of that pick, as Quid was basically the only super relevant person on 100 Thieves in that game, took Baron off of that, and when you combine it with the fact that FBI was on Smolder in that game, he ended up getting a Quadra kill in a fight around that same time as well, plus a Penta kill after that. He ended up with 18 kills in that game. They ended up getting a second Baron push to win it, but overall, again, just a little mistake from Quid. Yes, they did kind of get smoldered in the end, but it was that little mistake from Quid that kind of set up the rest of that game to happen, and with that second Baron push, they ended up blowing that game to NRG when otherwise it actually was looking like a decent game from them overall.
That first game was just completely undeserved, I think. The Smolder is really what sold it, and once again, Smolder is devaluing pentakills by picking up something that looked completely boring. Pentas should be exciting, but he just kind of cleaned up, so... It was the Smolder effect.
Yeah, and luckily or unluckily, depending on if you're a Smolder main or not, they are pretty heavily nerfing him coming up in the next patch. They're amongst a few changes, they're making it so his third tier of Q is up to like 275 stacks now instead of 225. So it'll take a little bit longer for him to be able to become that true kind of menace. And there are a couple of other nerfs mixed in there as well. And I saw his win rate has absolutely plummeted. So the good thing is, again, now they over-nerfed him. Compensation buffs coming back. So we'll see him back in pro play in a couple patches. And then in the fourth game for that series, that was the other game that 100 Thieves kind of ended up throwing. They were in complete control in that game, but then they just randomly decide to 50-50 Baron, and Contrax is just able to walk into the pit, basically uncontested by anyone on 100 Thieves at all, and he just steals it from right in front of their faces. Sniper then, in that chaos, ends up trying to go for a TP backdoor bottom, but the bot lane inhibitor ends up respawning, so he dies to NRG as they're able to kind of collapse off of the Baron and go down to him. And then they get him, then they start moving back up into around, I believe it was mid lane, I could be wrong on that, but they ended up moving back up off of the base. Palafox ends up hitting a very nice Nico ultimate onto Quid, Meech, and Ayla. FBI on Kai'Sa, Contrax on Lee Sin are able to follow up with the dive-in. They end up wiping off all of them except for Ayla, but NRG are able to win mid regardless. So, again, just a very poor decision in this case overall by the entirety of the team. At least with the first game, it was just Quid getting caught out, and then the Smolder thing happened, and they ended up blowing it. But this was just a rough decision by the team overall in that moment. There's no need for them to 50-50 Baron in that situation. And then, again, when you pile on with the fact that Contrax just got in there so freely and was able to steal it, it really was not the correct move for them in that situation. You just don't need to end up burger flipping it like that. But the other three games that they were able to win were pretty convincing games. Games 2 and 3 especially were pretty convincing. Game 5 was more so that kind of classic, it's game 5. This is an elimination match, unlike Fly versus TL. That was still the upper bracket. This is the lower bracket part. So 100 Thieves and NRG are like, okay, like we don't want to get eliminated, so we're not going to do anything for the first like 20-25 minutes of the game, but then at some point we're going to have to fight around an objective, whether that's Dragon or Baron, and then one of us is going to win the fight, and then whichever team wins that fight is going to end up winning the game, because the other team is going to be mental boomed because they realize that they just lost. And luckily for 100 Thieves, it was them. That game was very boring up until that one major fight that happened that 100 Thieves were able to pull off. They got Baron off of it. It set them up to win that game overall. It did take them a little bit to end it still. It wasn't like it was a quick end afterwards, but you also never really felt like that they were losing control or that like NRG really had a grip on the game. I think, again, you're just kind of really being overly safe in that situation. They had to take two more Barons extra before they ended up winning that game. But with that third Baron that they got, it was a pretty quick end after that. Obviously, they had a lot of the stuff taken down already. It was just a formality of, you know, get Baron, you feel a lot more confident having the buffed up minions and the buff around you push and end the game. So it was a very convincing series, again, especially in their wins, but even in their losses, definitely could have been avoided, especially that fourth game could have been avoided. I thought 100 Thieves played really well. But again, Quid, as we've talked about so many times with this guy, he had that little mistake in the first game, but dude is just absolutely smurfing it this season. I don't know how he got so much better and so much more improved from his debut split last year, but the dude is just absolutely lighting it up almost every single game. He is just so impressive, so much more improved, and he is absolutely in contention to be the all-pro first team mid laner for the LCS. It is just a marked improvement, and I'm super impressed by him specifically.
And you gotta wonder whether this was something that the organization kind of saw coming, because like you kind of were alluding to, that last year when Quid entered the league in the summer split, he just wasn't really cutting it. So seeing this level of change where, for whatever reason, 100 Thieves decided to rebuild the entire team around Quid, of all people. You know, you saw some of the names on the roster last year, you would have thought that Quid is the last person they want to choose, but he's really proved himself. But the one person that I wanted to shout out myself for both his performance in this series against NRG, but also that previous series against C9, where, you know, they got stomped. But either way, the one player I wanted to highlight is Sniper up in the top lane, because as much as the team around him as well is performing great, I think that this guy is probably going to be my candidate for rookie of the split. MVP is a separate discussion, of course, but at least in terms of the rookies, Sniper is the guy that has popped off the most from what I've been seeing. Especially against NRG, I think that he was by far and away the better top laner of the two between him and Dokla. In the laning phase, he was coming out ahead. He was picking up those early advantages, early skirmishes. And then in the late game as well, he performed quite well in the team fights. So he has been someone I've been watching very intently, and he's kind of been living up to the hype in a lot of ways, coming up from that early challenger hitting. But super, super big credit to him for his contribution to their win over NRG. And I'm just so excited to see where he goes from here.
It goes without saying that obviously with 100 Thieves, you needed these young players to do well and step up to the challenge. And they basically all have. Meech has looked really well in his moments. And then we just talked about with you, Sniper, you know, he's probably been, as I'd say, the most mistake prone, probably him or Ayla. Ayla's still getting caught out a little bit. The decision making for the team, we know, isn't always quite there, as he's talked about in interviews before. Sniper's got to watch the deaths a little bit sometimes, but that's just kind of with that kind of a play style. The solo kills are always going to be flashy, but then you're going to end up greeting, overstaying, getting caught out of position sometimes, split pushing, and you're going to get punished for that as well. But don't change, because it's that kind of playstyle that makes these talents worth it. You know, seeing a guy like Sniper kind of eventually, hopefully, iron himself out into a true star where he can limit those deaths and still keep the flashiness of his champion pool. Maybe we'll see a Riven being brought out in playoffs. That'd be a ton of fun. I think they hovered it in one of those games, but that'd be fun to see him play that in playoffs as his signature. Your champion. Blue shaking his head right now. I don't know why he's shaking his head to me. Pick Riven, Sniper.
Riven would be exciting, but he it would be an homage to his debut game, because he did play against TL that game, yeah, on the Riven pick. So maybe that is a thing they bust out in the next series. But
they're playing against Team Liquid next series. So
exactly. So it would be a nice homage, but I just don't think it's really worth it. It's just too volatile, and for how much skill you need to pilot the champ, I just don't think in the modern day League of Legends you get enough return on picking something like that. So I'd prefer something a little more generic, or maybe something like the Adam kind of pool, where you can still bring some usefulness to the team, but it isn't nearly as volatile as a Riven pick.
We'll agree to disagree on that one. Unfortunately, I did kind of spoil this last series, but it really was uneventful. It was Team Liquid versus Dignitas. It was a 3-0 for Team Liquid. I'm a little surprised that it was a 3-0. I thought that maybe Dignitas would be good enough to get a game, just because APA and Yan have their plenty of moments of not being able to carry a game or getting caught out and ruining a game for Team Liquid. But it was a 3-0. Game 1 was the most interesting game. Dig did have a 3,000 gold lead at 20 minutes, but Isles ended up getting caught top looking for a play on CoreJJ in the top river. And then off of that initial catch, Team Liquid moved on to Baron. They got a couple more kills, took the Baron, and then APA on his Aurelion Soul in that game, as well as Yan on Smolder. They were able to scale up and take advantage of the Baron power play gold, got a strong footing in the game, and then they were kind of able to put the game out of reach with those pushes, and obviously with the scaling of the Aurelion Soul, of the Smolder stacking up to infinity, they were able to actually play a pretty nice game. And I think, as I'll continue to talk about APA, I think he did have a pretty nice series overall. Games 2 and 3 were pretty much stomps for Team Liquid. I think APA, again, maybe was the standout player, but when you're talking about these 3-0s, same thing with C9, the whole team obviously ends up looking pretty good. But for the specific plays of his Aurelion Soul and his Ziggs as well, he had I think he played Ziggs for both of the other two games, definitely one of them, I might be misremembering, but his A-Soul, his Ziggs were very good. We both know that those are his kind of, you know, ideal champions. The Ziggs is his signature pick. He's known to bring out the A-Soul as well. We know a few players can bring out the A-Soul every now and then, but APA's been the only one to play it as of late, according to my memory. And it's something that he's played really well. I believe it was even last week in the regular season, he ended up playing a game of A-Soul, and he just had a super funny play where he was just like running down whoever they were playing in the top lane. He was just like stopping and starting with his fly and his dragon breath, and ended up playing that fight super, super well. And you can see in his player cam at the end of the game when they're running it down top lane to end the game, he was just having a big laugh about it. So when he's on his champions, he does have his moments. But I still think that is kind of the problem for someone like APA. You really do want to see him on his champions. Otherwise, the performances do tend to be a bit more inconsistent. And even still, on those picks, same thing with Yan, even though he doesn't necessarily have a stylistic pick of his own, there's still the problems of this team when they get caught out, whether it's just randomly in mid lane or if it's APA split pushing, you know, and overstaying too long. They still need to iron out their play a bit if we want to see them have a shot against some of these better teams that they'll be now facing into this next part of the bracket. But Dig was the perfect matchup for them. I had no faith in Dignitas going into this series, not because necessarily that I hate this team. I just hate Dignitas in general. They're going to have to like actually win a series for me to like actually believe in them at all, unless they really get like a super team roster somehow on their squad. XU was just like, I'm not really sold on him. I'm not sold on Tomo yet. And I think Dove was okay at some points for them, but still, it's just not there with this team. Like I said, I thought maybe they could take a game because they did actually surprise us and make it into playoffs. So the 3-0 was a little bit unexpected, but in no way was I going to actually give them a shot at winning this series. And credit to Dig for making quick work of them. Or for TL for making quick work of them, excuse me.
Yeah, and a lot of the same sentiment is going to come from me here, that out of this six-team lineup that made the playoffs, I think everyone was expecting Dig would probably be the weakest of the bunch by quite a wide margin, in fact. So credit to them for at least making it this far. They kind of shocked myself, at least, that they were able to pull it off over the likes of Shopify Rebellion. But yeah, it was just kind of a dominant series in a lot of ways, and when you saw that TL was able to take FlyQuest to 5 games, something like Dignitas wasn't really going to be a hindrance. So it's kind of not too much that I have to say. It's just a credit to TL for being clean about it as much as they were, not letting that kind of int carry over from the day before and kind of hinder their performance here. But it was always going to end this way is all I'm really able to say.
Yep, that's about as concise as it can get. Dignitas and NRG are the first two teams eliminated from the playoff bracket. Dig, not a surprise. NRG, a little bit of a surprise, but overall, with their play and over the course of this season, it just wasn't there for them. And although, again, they had their moments, I think that maybe even surprisingly the biggest thing for their reason to drop a play was obviously them losing like the coaching staff. Like, that was obviously a meme, but it was a big thing for them, I think. And then obviously some people have mentioned that, you know, losing Ignar for who he was a bit of a drop. I was a little bit surprised at that, because obviously FBI and who he have plenty of synergy going back together, playing on numerous teams. before this one. So maybe that still could be an impact, but overall it really was a surprisingly poor split for NRG. We'll see if there will be roster changes made or not, because this is still a group that, at the very least, I would assume they still probably like each other. I've heard some things of, like, you know, yes, the coaches, maybe they're kind of getting a little bit burnt out too, obviously, from playing as deep as they did into Worlds and whatnot. So there's just definitely some questions about this team. We'll end up seeing what happens with them. And maybe it is just as simple as, you know, Ignar's gone, the coaches are downsized, and this is just isn't a team that's going to be able to kind of have that upside potential anymore.
I'm going to go full monkey brain here and just kind of give myself a pat on the back for kind of calling it in a way that NRG are going to follow very much the same trajectory that Rogue did back in the transition from 2022 to 23. You know, NRG was able to pick up a win in a split that nobody was expecting them to. They were kind of the underdogs, and a perfect storm of events led to their victory, and now they ended up petering out and falling in the bottom half of the table for the LCS. So kind of small credit to myself there, because all I was really going off of was narrative, to be honest with you, but it happened. And now the G2 fan within me is excited about the fact that this is not a team going to MSI. We're basically guaranteed to win the whole thing now, because, you know, the best team in the world, NRG, isn't there to stop us. So G2's going to win MSI, basically.
True, yep. At the very least, it is an apt comparison with the Rogue thing, as you mentioned. I remember you talking about that before. So definitely you can take your credit on that. And we will be expecting now G2 to take down T1 and probably BLG at MSI. So now we will take a quick look ahead into the two games that will be coming up this weekend. The first series being on Friday and being between Team Liquid versus 100 Thieves. This, I think, will actually be... obviously, both of these series, with C9 Fly being the other one, will be an interesting matchup. But I do think Team Liquid versus 100 Thieves has some potential. If not just for the factor of having Impact and Core JJ on your team versus a group of basically rookies and, you know, maybe like slightly year two players and then River. So if you want to look at it more so from that kind of a perspective, you definitely have a ton of playoff experience on Team Liquid. You obviously have championship experience on Team Liquid as well. And even though I do think that 100 Thieves probably are the better team in terms of the individual, like, skill level, like, I would much rather have Quid with how he's looking over APA. I would much rather have Meech over Yan. I think Sniper versus Impact is interesting because they're completely different players. You'd probably rather take Impact in that situation. But overall, I think this is where if TL, and specifically again APA and Yan, can clean up their mistakes, this is actually a series where I kind of like TL in it. I feel like if they're able to be in position to take advantage of the inevitable mistakes that, at the very least, individual players, if not the entire team of 100 Thieves, will make, with whether it being a bad decision or a bad call like we saw with the Baron against NRG, or maybe it's just Sniper going a little bit too aggressive in a side lane, getting caught out a few times, maybe it's Meech or Quid getting a little bit too over anxious looking for a play with someone, and they end up being in a good position to turn it around. This could be a very sneaky series for Team Liquid. I'm going to put it 3-2 for them in Team Liquid's favor, and it is a very risky pick because, as much as I've talked about, again, the inconsistencies of 100 Thieves, TL have those pretty much same exact inconsistencies as well. So when you're kind of looking at it from that perspective, you might just want to take the better individually skilled team. But I'm going to kind of rely on that old reliable narrative of, you know, veteran experience, playoff experience, having two huge presences at Core JJ and Impact on your team to kind of guide APA and Yan, hopefully, through this series. And I think this is actually a very apt time to use it because of just how young, obviously, 100 Thieves' players are, but also I feel like when you're this new to the league, your emotions are definitely going to be riding high in a series like this. It's their first, or actually it's not their first, they played against NRG, but it's going to be their second only, you know, do-or-die series for a lot of these guys. Their first time really getting a big taste of that. Some of them have experienced it, obviously, in the NACL and an academy beforehand, but being on the big stage in front of all of those people in the LCS studio and facing up against probably the best quality team you'll have faced in a setting like this in Team Liquid with all those people on the other side that are very established players. If I think especially if 100 Thieves drop that first game, that'll be a very pivotal moment for them, and you gotta be able to kind of channel yourself and calm yourself and keep yourself composed. I think especially if TL are able to take that first game, I'll take them in the series. Overall, though, I think it will be a banger, and I think that the playstyles of these teams can definitely be pretty contrasting to make it very exciting, but I'm going to go Team Liquid 3-2.
This is a very, very hard matchup to call, and I appreciate that you did shout that out, because I think that the two teams are fairly evenly matched, all things considered, and it will be a lot. Now, the one thing I will say before I kind of get into my thinking is that Jan is someone I need to kind of give the credit that he deserves, because I was a complete non-believer in him coming into this year, and we kind of debated on that at length in our Power Rankings episode, but Jan very much, especially coming into playoffs now, has stepped up his game and has kind of been a little bit of a bastion for TL. So as the bot lane of 100 Thieves has been looking a little shaky, in my opinion, Meech has been kind of, he's been good. I will give him the credit, but he hasn't been as good as perhaps the hype kind of was out for him coming into the season. So I think that shakiness on the 100 Thieves side versus the up and coming on the TL side is probably going to be an advantage in TL's favor. On the other hand, though, I got to go with the fact that I think 100 Thieves are coming in with excitement from beating the likes of NRG. And using that kind of as a jumping off point, being able to enter into another strong team against TL, I'm hoping that the nerves are kind of going to start subsiding, if you will. So when it comes down to just the skill is what I'm hoping for, as well as River's leadership as kind of this more experienced player who's been very much stepping up for the team, I'm going to give it 3-2 as well, just because of how close it is, but I'm going to give it to the 100 Thieves side, partially because my heart says so, but also because I'm counting on the synergy that 100 Thieves have built and kind of that trust they have as a newer org or a newer roster, and I'm going to put my money on them.
And they also do have the best player in the series. They have Quid on that team. Again, just absolutely super dominant. Took Palafox to school in that series. And it's not like APA really is better than Palafox. They're pretty comparable in terms of like how you would rank them in terms of the rankings in the LCS. So if Quid is going to be stomping APA like he was stomping Palafox, then I still would probably expect 100 Thieves at that point then to be able to take it over. Because of that matchup alone, I feel like that is definitely the area that will be most exploited for 100 Thieves. You're definitely going to be looking to feed up Quid. If you're Team Liquid, you know, you still aren't really in love with either APA or Jan as being like your main guy. I would still say overall, I think Jan has been a little bit better. But I kind of even came down on Jan a bit more during the season as you were talking about like maybe him living up to it a little bit more. I actually kind of came down on him. I remember watching a lot of the games as like, man, like again, like just a lot of bad deaths. Some team fighting he had in specific games just wasn't really living up to it. So I kind of even cooled off on Jan a little bit. But if there is going to be a moment for TL to sneak off the series, it'll probably just have to be a team effort. Whereas I think 100 Thieves, if they can get Quid going, then he will be able to help facilitate with River and kind of bring the rest of the team up around them. I think Team Liquid does kind of need to play a full team game, so that could also be interesting as well. I think there's definitely going to be a lot of moving parts for both of these teams across this series, so definitely should be closer than I would maybe even think most people would expect. I would assume that most people would go into it thinking 100 Thieves are going to be able to take down TL pretty convincingly, but I'm very happy to see that we both are in agreement at least that this should be a tight series, even if we have the opposing picks on either side. And then this does lead into now the final game for this weekend on Saturday, Cloud9 versus FlyQuest. Now, this is going to be a very interesting series as well. Obviously, these are the two best teams left, you would probably say, in playoffs. 100 Thieves is definitely up there in that consideration with them. But with C9 3-0ing, then I think at this point you kind of have to give them the benefit of the doubt. C9, clapped FlyQuest in their most recent best of one that they played against each other. But the first game was a nice win for FlyQuest, so they're 1-1 tied in the regular season. This is purely a pick for me that I'm going to pick Cloud9 3-1 just because of the momentum of their previous series. C9 completely destroyed 100 Thieves, and that FlyQuest Team Liquid series is absolutely rough. So the pure basis for that pick is going to be momentum. It's going to be most recent form of how these teams have looked, and it's going to be a Cloud9 3-1 from me. Now, we all know that that FlyQuest is generally regarded right now, especially with how C9 was looking in the regular season, as the best team in the league. Generally speaking, that series against Team Liquid has been more of an anomaly for them. They've generally looked a lot cleaner than that. And as for C9, that 100 Thieves series can easily be viewed as an anomaly. They've generally looked a lot messier than that, have had plenty of just absolutely disgusting games themselves in the regular season of just complete underperformance and just like, what the heck are they doing? So if C9 ends up coming out of the gate looking like they did against the 100 Thieves, then they are the unstoppable team that we all expected from them at the beginning of the season, and absolutely no one on this earth can beat them. But if they show the holes like they kind of were in the regular season, maybe the drafting isn't quite on point, they're not helping facilitate Blabber, maybe Jojo Pyun is really starting to have to kind of do all of the heavy lifting like he was doing in some of those games, Berserker's not, you know, quite on his game for whatever reason on that day, then this could easily be a very thrilling five-game series as well. Like, there is room for every single outcome that you could predict, 3-3-0, 3-1, 3-2, either way. Any single one of those outcomes is possible in this series. I completely don't doubt it, because it's going to obviously be down to how these teams perform. But based off of the momentum, based off of how Cloud9 looked against 100 Thieves, FlyQuest, and that Team Liquid series, and just a little bit of that fact that C9 did beat them so convincingly in the best of one, that's not really super relevant for a series like this. C9 3-1 for me, but if the holes show up, if the consistent play isn't there, and FlyQuest are able to iron out their kinks as well, which again, I think you can probably expect that to happen, that TL series was impressively bad for both sides. This could easily be just the most impressive and the most exciting series that the LCS will have had in a little bit.
The one thing that I am praying and hoping for this series is that it is going to be clean. Regardless of who wins, I think that these are the two teams that should have been the most powerful, and seeing them in the upper bracket is a joy, and I just hope that it lives up to what it should be. Now, I will say that Cloud9 has picked the perfect time to peak, assuming that this is kind of their peak, or maybe they still have more to show and we haven't seen it yet, but coming into the playoffs, they were riding off of a very, very disappointing regular season. We saw plenty of mistakes, and I was kind of depressed about how far they fell, kind of questioning whether they would even make the top four as they now have, or maybe even further than that. So really glad to see that they're stepping it up and showing more of what the Cloud9 should have been. But I am going to say that I really should have stuck to my guns when we were doing our power rankings. I had FlyQuest in second place, but in the sort of same tier as C9. I'm going to stick to my guns this time. And I'm going to full commit to a FlyQuest 3-0. Crazy expectations, and to be honest with you, I don't see that ever happening. And I'm hoping that they're going to rematch again in the actual finals. But coming into this particular day, I think that FlyQuest are going to take it really personally how bad the series looked against TL. They're going to fix up what they were doing, kind of return to that regular season form that they showed, securing an easy top one finish. And as well, the factor that kind of ties it all together is the fact that Jensen is going to want sort of his take of vengeance, or his pint of blood against his former organization in C9. So plenty of motivation coming in from him. The other members of FlyQuest are going to want to show that they're the best and secure that spot in the finals and at MSI. And I'm just going to full send, full commit, FlyQuest 3-0.
There's definitely a lot to gain for either team that comes out of this. And I do think you did make a great point. Just have this be like a clean good, entertaining series of League of Legends, right? We don't want to see like that FlyQuest TL series over again. These are two teams that are very high caliber, at the very least, C9 should have been throughout the entirety of this season. On paper, these teams were clearly the best coming into the regular season. It is very nice to see them here meeting before even the finals. Hopefully this will be the finals matchup, because again, these should be the top two teams in the league, as you mentioned. But that is the important thing, is that if we're just talking about this from a purely just, you know, looking at the broad landscape of the region and seeing how these teams we would want them to do at an international level, as MSI will be coming up, obviously, please have this be just a fun, good series of League of Legends. We don't need any silly bangers. Like, if, like 40-minute games are fine, as long as, like, you know, like it's warranted. We don't want to just see like all this back and forth ping pong of teams blowing leads, guys getting caught, whatever. Just, you know, make it a very fun, good, just clean series of League of Legends. That really will be the biggest takeaway from this, that we could either garner, obviously, but C9 are definitely going to be looking for the momentum to be in their favor coming off that 100 Thieves series, and overall for FlyQuest, it will be still a big moment for them as well. This is an organization that has been in the finals before. They've been in the finals against C9 before. They were in there during the COVID era. I think it was like spring split of 2020 or something like that. They had that series played on like ESPN. I remember watching it on my TV at home, and that was super cool to see C9 win that spring split on the TV. And then that was the same year that they broke the trophy in their playing room after that too. So vivid memories of that. That was great. So definitely there is some history with these teams going back as far as that. Jensen as well. He had some good moments on Team Liquid against C9. He obviously had a great run there of championships with them, but it never gets old beating your former team. So, and even Vulcan was on FlyQuest too, right? So he might even have a little bit of motivation as well. We'll see, you know, with how all that stuff's going to go down.
Especially considering the fact that he joined the roster and then it crashed and burned and went ninth and missed playoffs, so...
Yeah, that whole thing happened. Just completely forgot about that.
He wants to show growth here, so he's probably going to have a bit of motivation himself, I imagine.
Yeah, and I think it's an interesting thing for Vulcan, too, because I think whereas Jensen, I think we can generally say he's still been playing, you know, pretty consistently good. Vulcan hasn't quite been up there as of late. Obviously, that FlyQuest ordeal happened. How much of that, you know, was, you know, just a complete train wreck? You know, it's not really on him specifically, but just his play this year hasn't been super great in general either. He's still been like a solid support. Maybe he'd be fighting for like kind of like a third all pro team, in my opinion. I wouldn't really be putting him number one, I don't think. Maybe even number two he might have a shot at, depending on what teams you're looking at. But there's definitely going to be, like I said, a lot to gain from both of those players, from both of these teams in general. And at the end of the day, we are obviously hoping for a rematch of these guys in the finals. But 100 Thieves would be a big upset there to go in there as well, because of their expectations. We all thought that this would be a summer split team, but the spring split has obviously been super promising for them. And I think even just don't beat TL. Like, don't put TL in the finals. That's all I ask. You know, like, they're not gonna have a shot at MSI even if they win an NA. So just don't beat TL.
I like the fact that we're on the same page. I'd be perfectly fine with 100 Thieves going to international, just because that would be a huge learning opportunity.
That'd be so exciting.
Yeah, so if nothing else, even the fact that they'd go and kind of play against the caliber of players at that tournament would be huge for some of these newer talents to develop and grow and come back even stronger in the summer. So that I'd be perfectly fine with that, but... Yeah, it's got to be between C9 and Fly because they're the two better teams, and then 100 Thieves for kind of the excitement. But then APA and Yonder.
We don't need to talk about it. Yeah, we don't even need to talk about it. That's going to be it for this episode of the Western Focus podcast. Appreciate you guys listening. Make sure, again, playoffs start on Friday for the LCS, not on Thursday as last week, but Friday, Team Liquid versus 100 Thieves. Saturday will be Cloud9 versus FlyQuest. Last week of the LEC regular season as well coming up. Two teams will get eliminated. Make sure you tune in for that as well.
And also on the LEC side, before we end off, I want to remind you guys that they're also going to have a bit of out-of-the-ordinary scheduling, in that they're skipping the Sunday, and they're going to play their match days on Friday, Saturday, and Monday. For I don't know what reason... Easter's next week, but They're skipping the Sunday this week. So in both leagues, make sure you tune in on Friday. Make sure you tune in on Saturday. Skip Sunday. Have your day off. Enjoy your free time. And then come back on Monday for the LEC. Don't miss out.